Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to
ignore it. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind for a very fascinating week in the Capitol. But before that, a very fascinating Wisconsin night was there. A sharp exchange between the two Supreme Court candidates, Brian Hagedorn and Lisa Neubauer. Republican Representative Tony Kurtz has applied to grow hemp, and he says, this is amazing, one hemp seed to grow CBD oil can cost up to $8. I can't make that up. Three candidates for the 64th Assembly Special Election District on raising the gas tax. Speaker Voss vows if Governor Evers vetoes the first Republican budget, the second one on his desk will spend much, much less. And let's hear from two congressmen, Mark Pocan and Mike Gallagher. Wish I was there.
People should not vote for or against me on the basis of my faith. I have never put my personal moral views or my personal religious views front and center in this race.
My opponent has acted upon his beliefs. He has founded a school, and that school bans gay students, gay parents, gay teachers, gay board members.
Are the production costs for hemp higher than other crops?
Like I pay $1.40 for a pound of hemp seed. There's some people that are growing it for CBD oil that a seed, just one seed, can be anywhere from $1 to $8.
Are cannabis users more likely to die? Well, the answer is not compared to the general population. The overall death rate in the population is 1.9 per thousand. If you go down the list, marijuana is actually 1.8.
While data shows strong growth, our growth has lagged behind the national average. I am putting a laser focus on the number one marketable driver for tourism in Wisconsin through the proposed creation of an Office of Outdoor Recreation.
The governor's budget, you're campaigning now, so you must be hearing about his transportation budget.
Mm-hmm.
8 cent increase in the gas tax.
Yeah.
The governor's office said that would be offset by repeal of the minimum markup. Could you vote for that funding method in the governor's budget?
Yeah. You could. I think it's a really good start.
I believe that if you repeal the minimum markup, it's a good start. I would have to look at, you know, how much of the gas tax we really want to increase.
The minimum markup, I'd love to go away. I think we pay enough in gas tax.
The governor's budget helps provide assistance to those hardest hit by well contamination through a five-fold increase in the well compensation funding program, and provides $40 million to help start the lead lateral replacement process across the state.
I believe the Senate and the Assembly will craft our own budget starting at base or less and move our way upward. If for some reason he believes that he is going to veto the entire budget because it doesn't spend enough, the budget he will get number two will spend less than the first one.
Is having 14, 15, 16 candidates good for your party at this point?
Yeah, I think it is. I think because have it where we'll see where the excitement is in candidates and what message is what the American people are desperate for, especially after Donald Trump.
The February 26th vote against the presidential declaration of emergency dealing with the border money.
Mm-hmm.
Was that on the policy of immigration or an excessive abuse of presidential power?
I voted against the emergency proposal because for years I criticized Obama for expanding the power of the presidency. And so I can, in good conscience, if I want to retain any intellectual consistency, support that expansion just because it's the president of my party using it to pursue a policy that I actually support.
Well, okay, the biggest news of the week, JR. Yesterday, a Dane County judge struck down all the lame duck bills,
mm-hmm,
and 82 appointments made by the legislature, enacted by the legislature, and the appointments ratified in December. He said the legislature did not lawfully meet during its December 2018 extraordinary session. The people's liberty is imperiled by a legislature that can meet at will anytime with little warning and even less of a published agenda. It was a genuine threat on the minds of the people in 1848 when they crafted the Constitution. You read the opinion, I read the opinion. It clearly says that the constitutional founders did not envision legislators being able to snap their fingers and call extraordinary sessions, even though I looked it up, we've had 27 mm-hmm since 1980, And, by the way, they've been very busy. The March 2004 extraordinary session enacted 153 laws. November of 2015, 118, and April of 98, 100. I've talked too much. Significance of the ruling?
Several things. One, it created a window for Tony Evers and Josh Call to operate as if the certain session had never happened. And what we see right away, immediately Governor Evers directed Attorney General Call to withdraw from the Obamacare lawsuit or take any steps necessary to withdraw from it.
Yep.
There's a big campaign pledge from both of them. Remember, this is a lawsuit that was filed by multiple states that Attorney General Brad Schimel joined at the permission, with the permission of Governor Scott Walker, to overturn that law. Both Evers and Call campaign on getting out of it, use it as a campaign issue because people have been worried about, you know, health care costs. Won and didn't have the ability shortly thereafter to withdraw from the lawsuit because Republicans changed the law to say the AG needs the legislature's approval to withdraw from any lawsuit.
Of legislative leaders.
But as soon as that decision came down, it was a matter of hours before Evers sent the message
to
call.
It wasn't even dry.
Get out. I'm sure that brief was most probably like just already written, you know,
yes.
just
yes.
waiting for a decision like this to yes. act. So it created that window. Now, there are lots of other questions out there, though. These 82 appointments, what's going to happen to them?
The
now,
PSC canceled a meeting.
Canceled the meeting
of the
today?
Because questions regarding Ellen Nowak.
The notice didn't say why, but I talked to the PSC who said, yes, we're still digesting what this means because remember, Ellen Nowak, who was Scott Walker's DOA secretary, the final day's administration, he elevated or moved her over to the PSC to fill a term that was had not expired. The guy wanted to leave, so she's got a landing spot post, you know, his administration.
Yeah.
Well, now what? According to the judge's decision, plain reading says that she's not a commissioner anymore. But, here's the but. We have an emergency brief that was filed this morning, or a request for emergency stay.
Stay.
Filed Friday morning,
yep.
seeking an order that would uphold or basically put aside the injunction, keep things as they were before, and keep those 82 people in their positions. Question I have, will Tony Evers try to change those appointments in the window that he has to act? I don't know.
Well, but we have to stay with this because it is so important. Mm-hmm. It's a major it's a clash between the legislative branch of government
Absolutely.
And the judicial branch of government. And at issue is the legality of extraordinary sessions that authorized in 1977, first one in 1980. There have been major changes. In fact, let's read from the stay. Now, this is what was filed by Republicans, the lawyer for Republicans, this morning saying, unless the Dane County judge's order is rescinded or held in abeyance, it would cause confusion about the lawful status of four decades of law adopted using the same extraordinary session procedure from the two-strike laws for child sex predators, the right-to-work laws, laws protecting against prenatal substance abuse, to the Milwaukee Bucks Arena, 3,000 pages of other laws. That's why this is a huge deal.
Judge Neese, in his decision on Thursday, limited his decision to just these extraordinary session laws from December. During the oral arguments, the attorney for Republican lawmakers said, look, if you, you know, overturn the, if you agree with these guys and overturn these laws, you're basically going to have to set all these prisoners free because there are all these laws that set sentences for them, other things. And he's like, I don't buy that, basically.
And the last line in that ruling by the judge is, no, we're not going to have to open the prisons.
That, but does it set a precedent? That
that's a footnote.
Point to, like, this is where you go, well, if those laws aren't good, what about these laws? And there becomes the slope you can go down about trying to challenge these things. Now, we shall see. And the other thing for Evers is, how aggressively do you want to act upon this window? If, I mean, there's a giant gulf right now between Republicans and Democrats, and they're not really getting along very well.
This chasm keeps getting wider.
So does Governor Evers say, okay, I'm going to seize an opportunity because these guys start to undercut me with the extraordinary session in December, and act quickly on appointments because there are two regents at UW, that system that he could swap out. He could put somebody else in the PSC in place of Ellen Nowak. Other things like that, does he try to act upon those things? Or if you act upon them, is there a downside that it exacerbates the gulf? And how do voters see this? Do voters go, well, that's being a little bit, that's kind of not right? Or they say, well, you know, they kind of try to take a sure shot at you, so, you know, it's fair is fair.
The motion filed today to stay the Dane County judge's ruling was filed with Court of Appeals District 3, mm-hmm. which is very significant. So First of all, JR, the ruling came down in Dane County Circuit Court, which is part of Court of Appeals District 4. Today's motion for stay filed in District 3, where if you look it up, two of the three judges were appointed by Scott Walker. So why not file the stay in District 4, which oversees the Dane County Circuit Court?
Because Republicans know they have a better shot in Districts 2 and 3. If you just look at, I mean, look, I know we try and the judges are impartial and you're above politics, but let's be honest, all right? There's a reason why Governor Walker pointed those folks to the court. He thought they would be in line with them ideologically on these things. So the 4th District Court of Appeals is much more liberal. And Republicans changed the law. I can't remember if they changed it about filing appeals, but gave themselves the ability to go elsewhere to file an appeal of a Dane County ruling because they were tired of Dane County judge ruling one way, 4th District ruling the same way, and then the Supreme Court's where they finally get a kick that they think is, in their minds, fair, quote-unquote. So they're going someplace they think they'll get a better audience.
They went to District 3, which is based in Wausau, instead of District 4, which Judge Kloppenberg, Judge Gary Sherman, former Democratic member of the Assembly,
Brian
and
Blanchard.
Former Dane County DA Brian Blanchard. So the request is for a stay. A stay could be ordered of the Dane County judge's ruling any minute.
They asked for
anytime.
They asked
by
for
the
one
end
today.
Of today.
They would have won Friday, yes.
Yes. So. Okay. Now, let's transition to a little bit more of the reaction. But first, let's hear from a press conference by Governor Evers, and then we'll use some old footage. Actually, it's not so old. It's Speaker Voss talking to the Federalist Society about why lame duck laws should be sustained. Please.
We've contended all along that the will of the people had been messed with by the special session. The judge made it very clear that the Constitution counts for something in the state, and we believe at the end of the day, even if it's appealed, it will be the injunction will be in place.
We are a republic, not a democracy, and that was the safeguard that the founders put together. And here we sit, 250-ish years later, with a system that is going back to what they were most afraid of, which is an administrative state ignoring the law and an executive who chooses to do what they want, waiting to be sued. And we have to hope that a court finds it correct. So if you look at every single thing we did in our special session, it encourages, invigorates, and I would say mandates that the branches have to work together so that no one branch has the unilateral power to be able to say, we're going to do things one way, and tough luck for the rest of you.
Let's stay with the fallout and the reaction here. As you pointed out, immediately, Governor Evers authorized Attorney General Call to withdraw from that Texas lawsuit. Do you think, as we sit here right now, that Wisconsin is out of that federal lawsuit, JR?
I mean, neither one
of us are lawyers, but...
I haven't checked the federal court to see yet if they granted the motion to withdraw, but, you know, it'd be unusual to deny a motion like that.
Okay. Were you impressed by that 20-page list of bills? And actually, I have the total, 28 union contracts ratified by extraordinary session since 1980. That was a pretty, I was impressed.
Long list. A lot of that stuff, like union contracts, are long since expired. They're not impacted by this. But there are other things that, you know, again, the judge limited his ruling to just what was passed in December.
Yes.
But what's opened the door to, and what can somebody else go after? Right to work?
Right.
Dems don't like that law.
That was passed extraordinary. The redistricting law that's now the subject of this federal lawsuit was passed in an extraordinary session of July of 2011. Changes to unemployment comp. Okay, we heard from Governor Evers, but he also said the legislature overplayed its hand by using an unlawful process to accumulate more power for itself and override the will of the people, despite the outcome of last November's election. And then just to repeat, because it's so important, the statement from Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Fitzgerald, today's ruling only creates chaos and will certainly raise questions about items passed during previous extraordinary sessions, including stronger laws against child sexual predators and drunk drivers. Okay, what's likely to happen next? A potential stay from District 3, Court of Appeals?
So it's a question of if the court will issue this stay and when, because when is a big deal. If it doesn't come down today, Evers has the whole weekend possibly to do other things. If he wants to, I'm not saying he will. But he did hint, during a Thursday news conference in his office, he said he's not going to act with speed on this. He's going to look, you know, digest it. But he did point to the 82 appointments and say, look, they must be a big deal because his predecessor did in the final days of the administration. So what's that mean?
Right.
You know, just something to keep an eye on.
Well, okay, but you and I've got a few years in the Capitol. So this is clearly a issue of first impression, legal term, a major legal precedent here. So isn't it likely that District 3 Court of Appeals might issue a stay and then send it up to the Supremes for a decision pretty quick?
Entirely possible. So the key is if there's a stay issue, because if a stay is issued, that puts the judge's ruling on hold in Dane County.
Yes.
That then reverts us back to what was the law after the December extraordinary session, and we go from there. So we'll see.
Okay. Just one more time, though. If District 3 issued a stay, they could order court. They could order a hearing on it,
mm-hmm.
or
they could take briefs.
The stay and send it immediately up to the Supreme.
Several options for them, yes.
Okay, now let's talk about another major action this week. Republicans on the State Building Commission voted against Governor Evers' proposed capital or building budget of $2.5 billion, and they said to enact this larger program is in one biennium is both unrealistic and unsustainable. The governor said this was about playing politics. Ray Cross's statement was pretty interesting because almost half of that 2.5 mm-hmm. would rebuild UW system buildings. Over 60% of UW system buildings are between 45 and 70 years old. The risk to safety and our maintenance costs and to Wisconsin's ability to attract and retain students are only growing. Finally, let's just quote Assembly Democratic Leader Hintz, Republicans' decision to not approve a single building project for the state is not a good sign as budget deliberations begin. JR, wasn't this the same building commission that voted to back the $2.5 billion at one point,
well,
and then they reversed themselves?
In committee, all the projects were approved, but when it
thumbs
came up to the commission
full
itself,
commission.
Different tack. Look, here's big picture I'm going to start with.
Cut through it.
If you have money in the office pool and the budget's going to be done, move it to the over, okay?
Yeah.
And this is why. Usually, the building commission is kind of a rubber stamp for the governor proposes, right? You just go through the projects, everybody says okay, moves the legislature, which is where the discussion is going to be had anyway. I mean, even if they had approved, you know, quote-unquote Evers.
Voted to move it along.
It still would have been chopped up by the Joint Finance Committee because there is heartburn in the Republican caucuses over the amount of borrowing in that budget, the $2.5 billion price tag overall.
Three times the last budget of the last capital budget of Governor Walker, excuse me.
They want to pare it back. Democrats will tell you that, look, the reason Scott Walker's last capital budget was a third the size of this one, because Republicans shirked their responsibility to maintain buildings for 8 years, trying to hold down spending. They allowed this maintenance to be deferred, and now it's at a critical point. And here's what happened in the hearing. A marathon 3-hour building commission hearing, which I've sat through a number of them, never one for 3 hours. But
that's a record.
Usually you vote the capital budget out, goes to joint finance, you go from there. Republicans offered this, and they kind of signaled ahead of time they were going to do it. Governor, let's work together. Let's send this to joint finance with no recommendation, and then work together to find something smaller. But in the 70-year history of the Building Commission, from what the governor's office says, that's never happened before. So Republicans put a motion on the floor. Let's send it to the Joint Finance with no recommendation. It deadlocked 4-4. There are four Republican lawmakers in that committee,
yes.
Two Democratic lawmakers,
yes.
Governor Evers and Governor Evers' citizen appointment.
Yes.
4-4 on everything. So after they deadlocked on that motion, it went through every project, one by one, 4-4, every single time. And Evers was... He said discipline was an understatement because Republicans had backed these projects in committee, but then the commission said no. Republicans were exasperated, like, look, we need to work together on this. Come with us on this motion to make it happen.
Well, and there's some major projects here. I just want to name a few. I went through the list, as you have. There's a new Milwaukee State Office Building, $98.5 million. There are barracks and new housing for prisons in Tachita, Jackson, and Ellsworth. There's $58.9 million proposed to expand the Mendota Mental Health Center to treat juveniles, which is a big part of his Connect the Dots program. Mm-hmm. The $70 million for a new historical museum a few feet from where we're sitting right now on the square. And $129.5 million for a UW-Milwaukee new chemistry building. So it may not be pork barrel, but some of these legislators will be judged by what's in the capital budget for, excuse me, their own districts,
and
their
look,
own backyards.
There's still time. Some of these things will still get done. The question is, how does this process work now that you have joint finance looking at it? And is there any kind of relationship right now between finance and Governor Evers' administration to get something done. What struck me through this process is the complete disconnect between the two parties in the Capitol. I mean, yes. We've been around for a long time. I've talked to lawmakers for a long time. There's always been disagreement. But I don't remember a time that I've seen such a disconnect of, like, what's going on and who's to blame. To Republicans, just with this Capitol budget, Evers overshot by putting out $2.5 billion. If he'd done a more moderate, you've heard that word before from brothers, right? More moderate proposal.
The M word.
They could have gotten something done, but he's jeopardized everything because, and they won't work with him. Yeah. To Democrats, it's, look, these things need to be done, again, because for 8 years they weren't getting done, and you guys are refusing to work with us because you're being hypocrites by supporting it in committee, but not supporting it for the commission, which means you want it both ways. There is, again, this giant gulf between the two parties about what's going on, and it does not bode well when this budget gets done,
right?
If it gets done.
It makes them even in deeper bunkers, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it widens the distance between those bunkers. Okay, now, Foxconn, Mount Pleasant, Racine County, on again, off again. So this week, Foxconn said, we plan to open a Gen 6 liquid crystal display factory in the final quarter of 2020. We plan April contracts for work on utilities, roads, and storm drainage. And we will have a formal RFP request for construction bids in May. The Racine County executive, we're really excited that we're finally going to see this happen. The spokesman for the governor, Melissa B., announcement makes it clear that Governor Evers is getting results. This is late in our show because of the on-again, off-again nature of Foxconn. How big a deal was this formal announcement?
In talking to people this week, the response was, we'll believe it when we see it. I mean, if you're a back of the project, you're thrilled because there's the concrete steps toward, you know, production. If you're a skeptic, you're going, so what? You know, they've talked to us before. It was originally going to be a Generation 10 facility, right, with screens the size of a garage door. Now we're talking, you know, big screen TVs, which are still big, but not garage door size, right? So it's already been pared back. So what's going to happen next? I don't know. What's fascinating to note, however, is that what's in the fourth quarter of 2020, Steve?
There would be a presidential election.
Who needs Wisconsin to get reelected?
Mr. Trump.
Who backed this project?
Mr. Trump was so, there
not to,
shoveling the ground.
Not to be a cynic.
Scott Walker.
Not to be a cynic, but there are people I talk to who think they're just commented about how politically intertwined this project is, or how intertwined it is with politics. I mean, Governor Walker, before his unsuccessful election bid, there were announcements about satellite investments around the state by Foxconn, seen as a way to try and send a message that there's a bigger impact than just southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Now they're going to shoot for production fourth quarter 2020, which is October, November, December. Yeah. You know, it's, again, the skeptics are kind of waiting to see. Okay,
believe it when you see it.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we get to your stock picks, I want to talk about two things. Number one, Speaker Voss was subpoenaed as part of the federal redistricting lawsuit, and he and his lawyers declined the subpoena. Doesn't want to testify. He's claiming civil immunity. Pretty interesting argument.
Absolutely. Were
you surprised by that? I mean, he's a party. He intervened.
He intervened, and what's interesting is, if you read the subpoena, the plaintiffs are seeking copies of documents similar to what Republicans asked of Democrats, and when they were part of the lawsuit, and the Dems dropped out.
They withdrew.
Because they didn't want to turn over, going back more than 15 years, like things like how they recruited candidates or raised money or organized. Well,
right.
They're asking that of Republicans, and they're saying we're not going to turn it over. Now, that question of political immunity and privilege, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to try and pretend to be one on TV, but it's going to be interesting to watch how it plays out. And, oh, by the way, the trials will start up in July.
In July.
This could go on for a long time, just this one issue. So
very interesting. Also, before we get to your stock picks, former Governor Scott Walker will be the national fundraising chairman for the National Republican Redistricting Trust, created in 2017 to raise $35 million to advocate for Republicans in future fights over redistricting and court fights, future maps of congressional and legislative districts. Big deal?
It's interesting, especially because Scott Walker's associated with a map that's being challenged in the lawsuit we just mentioned.
Because he signed that map into law, which is the subject of the July pending federal lawsuit.
It's interesting. He tweeted on Thursday that, you know, this is, you know, when Republicans have fair maps, they win, which has been the Democratic mantra for like almost a decade, talking about the map that he signed in 2011. He said Eric Holder's got $200 million and trying to spend that to lock in Nancy Pelosi as Speaker for years to come. Eric Holder fired back on Twitter, you just don't know what you're talking about. I mean, it's kind of fascinating, but here you have Walker. He also now is joining honorary chair of a group pushing for a national balanced budget amendment. Right. So you're seeing what Walker's doing post-government, right? He's got these two gigs. He's doing the speaking tour, so he's finding his spot. He's still tweeting about what he eats, you know, all the time.
He's keeping his national profile.
Absolutely.
So keeping some options open.
And then talking about that national amendment on balanced budget, he interviewed with the Washington Post, I think, and said, yeah, I'm thinking about running for Senate 2022, keep my options open.
That's just for the Ron Johnson seat.
Keeping the fire burning. Well, because Ron Johnson says he's not going to, he said two terms was it. So that seat would be open.
Yeah, but the wildest rumor I heard this week is that Ron Johnson might be interested in running for governor. Have you heard that?
Been around for a while, yeah.
Okay. Once again, you know more than me. Okay, we got to get to your stock picks. Rising.
So Lisa Neubauer, look, we're 10 days out from the Supreme Court race. This week, I did a tally of what has been spent. Now, we have reports filed with the state on independent expenditures. You know, expressly vote for, vote against, those kinds of things. Canvassing, door knocking, hangers. That kind of stuff. Digital ads. I also got a conservative media buyer to share with me how much Greater Wisconsin, the Greater Wisconsin Committee, and its political and independent expenditure arm has spent on TV between March 5th and March 25th. My total.
Attack ads against Hagedorn. Okay. Drum roll.
$2 million backing Neubauer, $133,000 backing Brian Hagedorn.
$2 million versus what?
$133,000.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
Of the Neubauer total, I mean, the bulk of it is Greater Wisconsin TV buys. It's $1.65 million, roughly. And that's a three-week period. There's still one more week to go. That runs to the 25th, which is Monday, so you still got one more week of TV to do. Mm-hmm. That's there. We are not seeing the conservative groups match the effort of liberals just yet. Now, it doesn't mean the race is over, but it's a very narrow path for Brian Hagedorn right now. If you are conservative, your best hope is that somebody comes in with a big buy the final week. But that big buy would just be catching up to what Greater Wisconsin has already done. And that's a challenge. Now, I have seen a lot of grassroots outreach from like groups saying, hey, we got to get going. There's a decision from the Dane County judge on Thursday about the lame duck laws, Planned Parenthood backing Neubauer. They're trying to gin up the conservative base in a grassroots way. But without an organized air war, without these other legs of the stool, like messaging, turnout, air war, without those three legs, it's hard to capture that enthusiasm, if it's there, to turn it into a win on April 2nd. But it's not over yet.
I understand.
But she's got an advantage.
Okay, mixed.
So
Pat Testa,
freshman state senator from Stevens Point, on the building commission. So during this whole voting against these projects, he voted against one in his own backyard. It was $3 million in general fund supported borrowing for converting the old Wisconsin Rapids Daily Tribune building into this kind of like entrepreneur center, okay? He backs that project. He's been there and backed it. He voted against it, the building commission. And he'll be for it, again, when it goes back to the legislature. Now, we've heard the before, he was for it, for he's against it, for he's for it again, right?
Right.
So it's an easy ad to write. Here's the thing. In the end, the big thing for Testin is, do Republicans in this final capital budget get that project back in there? Does he have the yes vote sometime in June on that project? It could blunt the attacks on this. But between now and then, there's an open window to go after him that, look, this guy's up in 2020. Of the four Republicans on the committee, the only one in an even swingy seat, really. You can go after him, though, until the budget's done, saying, look, this guy tells you he's for it. He's going Madison. You know, he's voting against stuff in his own backyard. He's not the only one in this kind of standoff we've seen, this partisan standoff, in a difficult spot. Patty Schottner up in Somerset, western Wisconsin, voted against a middle-income tax cut. I don't know that she'll get a chance to vote for one before November.
That's true.
But Tess is an example of like this political divide and these tactics are using creates difficult situations for folks that makes them a little bit uneasy.
You got 30 seconds on falling.
So Donald Trump, his numbers aren't good. We know that. Been that way for a while. Emerson College has a new poll out, showed him upside down. 55% say they won't vote for him. But here's what's going on. You've got one, that poll. Two, Democrats are coming next summer to Wisconsin. Three, we have national groups already spending money in Wisconsin on digital ads to try and undercut his appeal to his base. Axios, which is a publication based out of the D.C. area, did a focus group with some Appleton area voters that that found they're tired of his lies and how he treats people. And oh, by the way, his wall could pull money from two military bases in Wisconsin.
Military bases in Wisconsin.
It's not a great combination, but as I've said before, if you're an unpopular incumbent, how do you win a race? You tear down the other candidate. There's still a path for him in Wisconsin if Democrats appoint or nominate somebody who's so out of the mainstream or so extreme they can define him or her that way, and then he ignites his base, there's still a path.
Okay, really quickly, next week be dominated by the debate over the lame duck sessions, legal, illegal, and the closing arguments in the Supreme Court race, right?
Yes.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for March 22nd.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.